This is Scott.
This is Pat.
74% of Americans were asked this financial questions about their retirement and got it wrong. We're going to cover that.
We're also going to talk a little bit about the investment you should never, ever own. I mean, never.
And by the way, we don't say that about too many investments, because usually there's a place for everything. But this particular place, which is being pitched a lot, we believe you should never own it. So if you want to learn more, stick around for Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are here with us at Hanson McLean. You heard the start that we've been doing this for 20 plus years. Unfortunately, today is our last program.
What? Really?
It's April Fools.
Oh, God.
Huh? Not good?
No, it's not. I skipped a beat. Really? I was like, what?
That's like, what happened?
What?
You're not drinking your coffee this morning? Like, what's
what?
Going on with you?
What are you doing? Where are you going? Anyway, did you climb a mountain or something?
I wish. I got to figure out how I can do this while I'm hiking.
I have suggested that we do these elaborate videos where you answer financial questions while doing some sort of dangerous sport, like riding your bike.
Dangerous sport. Riding my bike's not very dangerous.
When you run it for 24 hours in a row, or you go mountain bike riding and you fly off the side of a cliff in Utah, like those stories. Well, those stories you shared with me?
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, not dangerous at all.
This is a financial program. There's no danger listening to us. Actually, hopefully you'll get some things that will help your life, not add any more danger to it. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself. Come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. And you may be listening to us live and broadcast. Well, this program is broadcast out of Sacramento, KFPK, and KGO in the Bay Area, and KOA in Denver. So you might be listening to one of those stations, or increasingly, might be one of our podcast subscribers. I think we have more people listening to podcasts today than doing the radio program, because it gives you an opportunity to listen when you'd like. Anyway,
you could go to HansonMcLean.com and become a podcast subscriber yourself.
And something totally off topic here, Pat, but April 1st, almost every April 1st, my wife brings up to me a prank that we played on my sister-in-law. Oh,
I feel so bad about it. I was afraid you weren't going to talk about
it. I was hoping the prank gets worse every year. Their recollection of what the prank
was. Don't even talk about it, please.
It wasn't that big of a deal.
It upset your sister-in-law.
It did. That's the thing I learned.
Which made it.
Yes. And so, but as time went on, the prank is much larger than it was.
Normally,
I said, no, that wasn't the prank. Oh, yeah. I'm like, nah. Really
the story gets worse than the damage and the heartache.
Yeah. I think she might have forgiven you by now.
Your sister-in-law? I never see her, sir.
It doesn't
matter to me.
You never see her. If I have enemies, as long as they're not my life.
Speaking of our website, HansonMcLean.com, HansonMcLean.com. I'm going to share a quick...
Were we speaking of it?
I am.
We were talking about...
this is a little bit April Fool's.
Huh?
I felt like an April Fool. I found out just this week, my son sent me a video.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
I have a son that goes to school in Denver. And he told me he was...
Why I chose Denver?
The snow skiing.
Oh, okay.
Why?
I don't know. I thought it might have been the legalization of marijuana came before California.
He's not a fan.
That's good.
At least he tells me he's not a fan, but he's into whatever. So...
get through school, get good grades,
but he did it because he loves the snowboard. But so he sends me a link today. He said, Dad, you were on this pop-up on the Weather Channel out of Denver. So I look at it. So 2 years ago, I'm up in Tahoe. We got a little cabin in Tahoe. And I walk out the front door and I round the corner and there's a bear coming right at me. And I throw up my hands and I run away. And I go back in the house.
In fear, by the way.
In fear.
At the website.
I was afraid. So how's it tie into this video? So he sends me a link, a picture of me running from this, almost running head on into this bear and then turning around and running. You can't see my face because it's obscured in front of our house. There's an American flag. It was around the 4th of July. We had an American flag up, but you can't see my face. So I'm like, how did this happen? Who took a video? How did I not know about this? We have no idea who posted the video, but it's had 11 million views. So I have gone viral from my top of my chest down. It's the best video. My face is completely obscured.
Which it makes the video pretty good.
The same reason I do a radio show is because my face is obscured.
And if you want to see Pat running away in fear from a bear.
From a bear. And be one of, quite frankly, 11 million people that, quite frankly, I think this is the start of a new career. I'm going to become a body model.
Body model from the neck down
from
only.
The neck down.
Don't include the face.
I was a before body model.
Middle-aged man. And if it's actually, if it's just, yeah, from the neck down.
I did the before pictures on bottle modeling. Body modeling.
I was the before guy.
And a lot of people aren't aware of that. But sometimes they forget to take the before
the
pictures.
I don't need the visuals.
So anyway, okay. If you go to HansonMcLean.com, you'll get Lord. To see me run into a bear.
Pretty exciting. Anyway, this is a financial program. We're off topic for quite a few minutes, so hopefully you bear with us. And we typically will take a couple of calls, talk about some other financial topics, have a guest, and have some fun. And if you want to join us, have a question for us, simply call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. So call that number, and we'd love to get you on. And we're going to start off here with our calls in Sacramento. We're talking with Ken. Ken, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Ken.
Well, I listen to you guys regularly.
Thank you.
And I'm 74, and I'm pretty much set. I have enough money and all my real estate and everything paid for. I don't have any debt. And that brings me to my call. I'm worried, maybe needlessly, but I don't understand how we can keep going like we're going with not enough gold to back up our dollar and these trillions of dollars of greenbacks running around the world. And if everybody makes a call on them, what do we do? And should I be worried or just go on down the road like everybody and have a beer and forget it?
are you referring to our national debt?
Yeah. Our country. And like if they go off the dollar, the Fed can't print money. And Russia and China, I believe, are already trading oil and rubles, you know, and they're circumventing the dollar. And I think about 40 other countries are doing it and trying to go around it. So where are we at?
Scott?
Yeah. So I clearly share your concern in our debt. I don't think we can't go on this way forever. At some point in time, we're going to have to get back to a balanced budget. We're going to have some surplus to start repaying this debt. And frankly, a concern I have is that if we have rising interest rates in a period of time when we don't have necessarily a robust economy, which means increasing revenues to the Treasury, the cost of servicing our debt will become very significant. And it's just like most of
it already is. What is it, $250 billion a day or something like that?
Well, the cost has come down significantly as interest rates have come down, right? So, you know, just and such a good portion of government debt is low duration. Think of it like a variable rate mortgage. It's low duration. The thing that we need to keep in mind, though, is a couple things. One, first of all, most of the holders of U.S. debt are U.S. institutions and individuals. So China has been cutting back on the holdings of U.S. treasuries. I was reading, saw a study, I don't know, a few weeks back. So China actually has less. And you know, it's funny, one of our analysts here, he loves to give all these charts of monetary flow and all these sort of things. And he had one of these charts in a recent meeting we had. But the majority of our debt is held by Americans and institutions. So as long as people still have faith in the U.S. system, the dollar still has value. And the Fed always can print money. That's the thing that the Fed can do. And furthermore, roughly $5 trillion of the $20 trillion of debt is owed to the government itself, owed to the Federal Reserve. So it's, I don't have an immediate concern. The dollar's been rallying because it comes down to what are the alternatives.
And
there's only so much gold out there, too, right? So we can pick any commodity.
Yeah, it doesn't. But Scott, and many countries have actually tried to move away from the dollar only to come back to the dollar. Because
you don't think I should worry about anarchy?
Well,
if you want.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't worry about anarchy every day?
So here's where it sounds like you're in a position where I don't think you should worry. And maybe others would be in a position to worry. You said sounds like you own more than one piece of real estate. You don't have any debt. Imagine your cash flow needs are probably fairly modest.
You're 72.
Yeah.
So if everything blew up financially, you'd probably be one of the last ones down. And if we ever hit a point when there's total anarchy, a reset in the system, it's not going to matter what you've got.
Yeah, and your assets won't matter. It's what you can consume that will matter. So while we can share your concerns, we don't see them as immediate concerns, but we do think that there needs to be a fiscal rewrite in our federal monetary policy in order to strengthen the overall economy and the growth of this nation.
Yeah, I don't see how these deficits
so
are.
You don't think our credit card debt as a whole is going to have any kind of an impact?
No, nah. You know,
here's what I recall. I'm going to tell you a story that I recall. When I was this was 1988, I believe, and I was finishing up college, and I had breakfast with a friend of mine who was. He was 10 years old. He was kind of a mentor kind of person with me. He was in the commercial real estate industry. And he gave me a book titled The Coming Economic Doom. This was in 88 or 89, 1980, right before the 90s. Right? The Coming Economic Doom. And it laid out all the reasons because if you remember the federal deficits
years ago,
remember all the deficits we had in the 80s, right? And what was followed by that? One of the greatest booms we've had to experience in 100 years. And I just remember it was a good lesson for me because I look back now and I think I'm glad I did not follow that advice and think just because we had some deficits for a period of time, we're going to have some economic doom. So do I think these things are healthy? No, I don't think they're healthy long term.
But it's not the first time that we've seen this either.
So. And sometimes it's just as an investor, you need to. Operate in the environment that is in front of you. That's all you have is the environment in front of you. So I don't know if that helped you. I wouldn't worry if I were you. I don't spend a lot of time worrying about things I have no control over. And that's something you have no control over. So Ken,
appreciate the call.
Yeah, I wish you well. And I kind of tell you, Pat, I recall I was at a conference in Southern California. It was some sort of financial services conference. And Ben Bernanke was... a speaker there.
Okay.
And it wasn't a very large conference. And so there was a cocktail party type thing. And so I went up and started having a conversation with Dr. Bernanke. Asked about his kids. No, I'm kidding. my question to him had to do with the same issue. And I shared to him, I said, my concern is that when rates go back up, the cost of servicing our debt will increase dramatically.
It could swamp you.
And could swamp us. And I said, do you share any of that same concern? And you can tell he did not want to engage me in this conversation.
Why would he? He's having a cocktail. And
he's retired.
He's retired.
Point.
Some he's little guy. The suit comes up.
Some little guy in a suit.
Huge pinky
What's that
ring.
To do with it? Big attitude.
Huge pinky ring.
I don't have a big pinky ring. Not that there's anything wrong with pinky rings.
Okay, but, so what did he say?
Oh, he said, oh, well, you're not going to have that without a growing economy. So the increase taxes would be more than enough to compensate. And he literally turned and faced the other direction. Like, he clearly did not want to have that.
That was your brush with economic greatness, but he's probably right.
Well, the point is, you're not going to have high inflation and high interest rates.
Well, unless you have robust economic growth.
High inflation. Well, you could have inflation without robust economic growth.
Okay.
But you can't really have inflation without having increased tax receipts, because the increased tax receipts.
But with that,
if you think everything else being equal, if things went up 10%, that means Social Security going up 10%, Medicare goes up
10%,
everything else goes up 10%, your cost of servicing the debt is going to go up much more than 10%. If our interest rate is U.S. government, where we're paying roughly 10% on average as opposed to 2%,
it's much,
it'd be dramatically more expensive.
Yes.
Fivefold in that example.
Yes. I'm with you.
Which could swamp. Anyway. But it comes down to...
there needs to be some fiscal responsibility in the federal government.
Trump's going to make deficits great again, though. I think that's what he's going to do. I don't know.
Scott.
There's not a lot of, huh?
Scott. I don't think that this administration
No, I'm not going to go there. All right,
let's go there because
we don't want to answer all the emails and phone calls.
Yeah, this is Hanson McClain's Money Matters, though. You're at, and
let's talk. And we're not endorsing nor saying good or bad about our president Donald Trump. I'm just saying that. I actually have.
Well, there's no sense.
There's the jury's out.
You go to your medical doctor. I don't really want to have an engagement with my medical doctor, but.
Yeah.
Politics.
Nor do you want it with your financial advisor.
What's the point?
Now, we're going to talk to Greg in Sacramento. If you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSEN. That's 888-2-HANSEN and always at HansonMcClain.com. We're going to talk to Greg in Sacramento. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. Nice to talk to you guys.
Thank you, sir.
And by the way, I'll go there. I think Trump will give a good shot in the arm for our economy.
Okay. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
They can send me the emails.
Okay.
Hey, my question is, I'm 60 years old, just turned 60, and went through a lot of trials and tribulations around 2009 with the housing downturn and marriage, job, house, basically went off the grid for a while. Anyway, I'm back on the grid, tax paying, everything else. I've got $20,000 to my name, and I plan on retiring in about 8 years. What is the best thing I should do with that $20,000? I do owe the IRS some money because I forgot to pay taxes when I went off the grid.
Do you own a home today?
No, I don't. Buy a home. Is that the best?
Well, so the biggest threat that can face retirees is inflation. Right? Frankly, that's the most challenging thing. So if you have a house with a fixed rate mortgage, that payment is going to remain consistent regardless of what happens with inflation. So you could have a period like we had in the late 70s and early 80s when you have dramatic inflation, rents are going through the roof, but as long as you've got a mortgage, that mortgage will not change at all. So it's a bedrock of security for retirement.
Now, in saying that, he's got $20,000 down. From the sounds of it, your credit is not all that good. Is that correct?
It's been a number of years.
Well, you know, actually, I have good credit, except I have no credit because I didn't have any credit. I didn't use my credit cards and they expired and they say no credit is worse than bad credit.
So I would establish a credit history.
I would talk to a mortgage lender and
establish a credit history, and then I'd be prepared to buy on the next dip.
Okay.
Whenever that might be.
It could be a year. It could be 3 days. Would you buy today?
Oh, yeah. I have a good job and been doing it for a year now, and I make good money.
And what do you make?
$85,000.
And you need to start saving more, too.
Oh, I do. I pump the 401k as much as I can, and I live pretty frugal. I pretty much did my early retirement already once, so I don't deserve to retire again until 68 or so.
Yeah, and if you can make it to 70 before you collect Social Security, it's going to be your
better.
Best thing.
Even better. So what you want to do is look to purchase a home at sometime in the future.
Near future, or I don't know what the interest rates.
I would look around today. Interest rates are good. We don't know what tomorrow brings.
That's true. Okay. No, I've actually started looking, but I just hadn't pulled the plug yet.
Yeah, and buy something modest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I want something small. I don't want any more big houses.
Yeah, modest. So appreciate the call.
All right, good luck, Greg.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, you know, Pat, here's what I find interesting. So you don't believe in that you can time the markets.
Okay, I don't.
Right. But on real estate, in the area like Sacramento where things are still relatively inexpensive, mm-hmm. rents have increased since the last housing downturn. Why would you not advise a 60-year-old who needs to own a home? Why would you advise him to wait a year or two?
Based upon his history, he's only gotten his life together in the last year. Okay. He's got $20,000 saved up.
That's the issue then.
Well, it was part of it. If he had said I had $200,000 in the bank, I'd say, you know, go ahead.
And there are clearly times when there are signals. There are clearly when, from a fundamental standpoint, just looking at the underlying fundamentals where they scream, great deal.
Or rent.
Or the times that say, whoa, boy.
So what do you think it is? I think it's a push, whether you rent or buy right now. It's a push.
I think some markets I would be reluctant to. Some of them, for an individual who's planning on buying a home they're going to be living in for a long period of time, I think it's a pretty good time to be buying right now. Interest rates are low, et cetera.
Okay, if you're going to buy for what? For how long?
5+ years.
Okay.
5+ years. If someone is speculating, I'd be a little nervous.
If they're viewing it as an investment. What you're saying is that...
In particular, in some of the commercial stuff, who was I talking to? What market was where cap rates were threes?
I saw that.
Threes.
I saw that. Which means that historically, they're much higher than that. The higher the cap rate, essentially, the more rent you're going to get for every dollar. For the rest of the listeners, for the higher the cap rate, the more rent you are going to receive for every dollar that you invest in the property.
Yeah. The lower, the less rent you're going to get.
And threes are historically low.
Like is that the lowest you've ever
been? But Scott, I don't believe you could time the market, but I believe that most certainly in every asset class, there are times where things appear a little bit more attractive a little bit less attractive.
And the challenging thing today for most investors is nothing is a big
nothing
on sale.
Nothing screaming, I need to own this.
Yeah, there's nowhere where there's a tremendous amount of pain and people running away from.
Correct. But what you are seeing is all kind of alternative schemes that actually seem to satisfy that. So I came across this article called Rules Governing Indexed Universal Life Insurance. So you've heard us speak negatively. If you've listened to this radio show at all, you've heard us speak negatively about index annuities, of which we are not a fan. Different pig. Well, actually, same pig, different lipstick. These indexed universal life policies. Indexed universal life policy. And they're you'll often see them times promoted about don't put money in your 401k, don't put money in an IRA. You're just making a promise to the government that you're going to pay them a tax in the future. Instead, put your money into these universal indexed life insurance products. Last year, they sold $1.9 billion.
I was actually surprised how much went into...
in annual premium last year, $1.9 billion. So this article came...
That's a pittance compared to how much money went into, let's say, mutual funds as a whole or ETFs. But you don't see any pension plans buying this crap.
No, you don't see any. Institutional wealth buying this.
No.
Well, you do see institutional wealth buying...
the companies that sell this.
Yeah. They do.
Yeah.
And you do see institutional wealth buying index funds or actively managed funds in their pensions.
So, Pat, you came across an advisor who used to be a fiduciary advisor.
Correct. Well, he had a securities license and he gave it up. I don't believe he was ever. And
here's the thing.
What was it? Prosperous Life.
Here's the
marketing stuff. Prosperous Life.
Here's the thing. To sell a security product, a mutual fund, for example, a stock, one would need to be licensed with the Securities and Exchange Commission and with FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. FINRA is the one. So, and it's highly regulated. Advertising gets reviewed. Some advertising needs to be submitted in advance to the regulatory bodies. Highly regulated. Insurance sales, on the other hand, it's the Wild West.
And in fact...
I'm not telling you, it is the Wild West.
They will actually, what this ruling was called Actuarial Guideline 49, which restricts some of the unrealistically high returns being presented to clients.
Presented assumptions going forward.
Where they give you a printout that says this is what's going to happen with your investments.
You couldn't do that if it was a security product.
No, you can't. Are you kidding?
But the stuff they get away with because it's not. So here, Pat, you were looking at this company. The leader of the company was a securities licensed individual, gave it up. He's not a fiduciary, not a registered investment advisor.
Correct.
Doesn't have to follow those guidelines.
But sells this universal.
And you can say whatever you want. Who's coming after you?
Indexed universal life.
Who's going to come after you?
Well, the insurance company, the insurance regulators can, but they haven't.
I've never seen any of that.
But they haven't.
I've never seen any of
that. So what they say is they give you a printout of what's going to happen with your investment. Let's just suffice it to say, garbage. Indexed universal life, garbage.
garbage, garbage. Forget the idea about how
it's garbage,
super different, and why would you bet on the Wall Street? The reality is institutional investors are not buying index universal life because it's a poor investment.
How much are the commissions on these?
Huge. Oh, huge.
50%.
Nor should you buy index universal life because it's just another investment fad.
It's not a fad.
Index universal life is a fad. It's a scam. I can't say scam.
It's not necessarily a scam. It's not good for for the broker.
It's not good for you.
It really is garbage. Anyway, we got to take a quick break. If you want to join us, 1-888-2-HANSEN is the number. We'll be right back with Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Taking the financially complex and making it simple. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSEN.
Now, you know that intro voice right there talking about taking the complex and making it simple. That is something we really try to do here at Hanson McLean, both on the radio program and as an organization, because I think our industry kind of makes it complicated.
So,
first of all, it's
19 advisors here in the firm. So we have effective communication training with the advisors. By our very nature, being financial advisors, we have a tendency to gravitate to the number. The numbers, right?
The people who gravitate to this industry are financial advisors. Yes, they're numbers folks.
They're numbers folks, right? And why we have effective communication training for our advisors and for ourselves is to help remind ourselves that people speak English. They don't speak financial jargon. And that we need, if we're explaining something and someone doesn't understand it, then there's no sense in talking at all. Because what we're trying to articulate is a concept or an idea about people's money and how to use it for their benefit to improve their lifestyle. And we're using
Words like equities and fixed income. By the way, if you're listening right now, and if you say, well, I don't really know what an equity is, or I don't really know what fixed income means.
Well, then you're
that's
normal.
That's fine. Yes, that's good. Don't worry about that. You might have a lot of assets.
Yes. And equity, by the way, is stock, and fixed income is a bond.
I have a friend of mine, very successful, owns a, I won't say what kind of business it is. Very, very successful guy. And a couple years older than I am. And we're talking, I said something about index funds. And he says, what's an index fund? Right?
Comfortable enough around you to not look like a fool. Imagine how many people would actually not say what's an index fund.
Correct. I understand. So you got to.
What is an index fund?
I don't know. But it's not. So, I mean, these are terms that can be used a lot. And if you go to suddenly talk to a financial advisor and they're starting to use these terms, asset allocation, all this stuff, and you. It's okay to say, whoa.
Yeah. Like I've said to my doctor, talk to me like I'm in the third grade. Yeah. Talk to me. I've said it to my doctor. Talk to me like I'm in the third grade. And then we can improve upon that.
Yes. And so we do try to make things simpler. Now, we understand we also have some quite sophisticated listeners and sophisticated clients. But sophisticated might not even be the right term. Just maybe a little more education in that area.
Further down
life.
The...
And you could be very successful in saving for retirement and saving for your future and your financial life and without having to understand what index funds are or beta or standard deviation or portfolios or regression to the mean and all these other terms we throw out all the time. I mean, you don't need to be an expert on all those things.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to have some plan and some strategy in place. That's for sure. But we do try to make it simple.
So what question does 74% of Americans, what question can they not answer about their retirement?
How old am I going to live?
So roughly, how much money do many financial experts recommend people save by the time they retire?
How much do you need by the time you save for retirement?
As a percentage of your last year's income, do you need 10 times your last year's income?
5 times?
7 times? So based on a survey of financial experts, what was the number that people said that you should have saved, how many times your last year's income? Between 2 and 12 times, what was the number? So answer that yourself.
What was the number? You lost me.
Well, financial experts say you should have 10 to 12 times your last full year's income to retire.
As a rule of thumb, 10 times your last year's income.
That's pretty much, yes.
Just good rule of thumb.
Yeah. So if you make 100.
The frightening thing about this study, 25% or 26% of respondents expected to only need to save 2 to 3 times the amount of their last year income.
And that might be the case, Scott, if you retire with absolutely no debt. And
have a pension.
And have a pension and Social Security.
Okay. Well, okay, maybe. But maybe, okay, I'll give you that.
No, but because, so this is what the 7 personal decision points, the book you wrote, Decision Points, actually addresses this question. It's the first thing that it addresses is how much money I need to retire?
Our whole process, the process that, not just the book, the process that Hanson McLean uses.
But we're promoting the book right now. So if you go to HansonMcLean.com.
/book.
/book.
Is it /book? Hanson, I think. So go to HansonMcLean.com, find the book, click something, there's some coupon.
And you get a coupon there so you get the book for $5.
75% off. Yes. Price.
Yes. The point being is,
act now.
Most people, the average person needs 10 to 12 times their last year's income to retire comfortably.
But every situation is unique.
A little bit unique.
One of the reasons that Hanson McLean, for example, we talk about most Americans like to have their home paid off by the time they hit retirement. It's their homes paid off. If you look at most people's number one expenditure is the mortgage.
Yes.
If you can get that mortgage gone, that's that much less income you need at retirement.
So last week we did a number of these 7 personal decision point workshops, and that was the number one question was about mortgages. Should I pay my mortgage off or not pay my mortgage
off? Every situation is unique too on that.
And remember, money not going out in retirement is exactly the same as money coming in. So if you had a $2,000 mortgage
payment,
I'd say
it's better. Because money coming in is most probably not guaranteed.
You're better. That's actually a good point.
You know, because you got a mortgage, that's pretty much guaranteed.
So money not going towards your mortgage is if you get rid of that, it's the same as money coming in.
That's right.
So, that simple.
Anyway, it is that simple. Yeah. And if you got a question for us regarding something in your financial world that could happen to be about your own mortgage or an investment, something you've got, or 401k, whatever the case may be, to join us, it's 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And we're talking with Mary. Mary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. So my question is, I'm pushing 60. I'm 59 years old. I am out of job now, but I'm hoping to get another job soon. I own a property that I'm renting. It worth near, let's say, $1.9 million.
Okay.
And I owe on it like $370,000.
Okay.
My rent pays for its payment, tax, and everything, and it gives me like I guess near $2,000 in cash, a little less than $2,000.
So what is the Mary, what's the gross amount that you receive in rent?
Per month.
About $4,500.
Okay.
$4,500 per month, yeah. So, and I have a condo that I bought 3 years ago. It has appreciated about, I want to say, $150,000 on it. I owe on that condo $270,000.
And what's the value of the condo?
I want to say $550,000.
Okay. Keep going.
So, my question is, shall I cash out some of my 401k and pay off my both properties? Or shall I sell my condo, take the cash, and pay toward my house and move back to my house?
What is your plan? You know, so here's an interesting thing, Mary. You are in probably the most expensive real estate market in the country, right? San Jose's gone nuts.
Yeah.
You paid, when did you, your condo's worth $550 a day. What did you pay for it 3 years ago?
$370.
All right, $370 and it's worth $550.
Wow.
In 3 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're not going to see the same appreciation of this magnitude going forward. It's impossible, mathematically impossible. So you've had a tremendous run up, right? And the $1.9 million home, how big a home is that?
Less than 2,000 square feet.
Probably a 40-year-old, 50-year-old ranch house or something?
Yeah.
For $1.9 million.
And tell us how much you have in your 401k.
What's the...
I have less than a million. I have about 700.
Okay, and so you said you're leaving one job and wanting to start another one. Elaborate on that.
I'm hoping. I'm applying.
Do you want to do that? Do you want to continue to work?
I got laid off. Yeah, that's what I'm asking you. I like to. Yes, I want
to keep working.
Yeah, so because if we just do some quick numbers, you're worth about $2.5 million. Just adding up these three assets. Is that right?
Less the debt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The one challenge, so I think your original question was, should I take the money in my 401k and pay off the mortgages? While that can be tempting to do, the challenge with that is if you cash in your 401k, it'll be like you earned $700,000 in one calendar year.
So we know the answer to that is probably not.
No, because your tax rates would be ridiculous.
But the bigger question is, what are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to achieve? Do you want to stay in the San Jose area? Do you want to retire to someplace? Because I know there's
a lot of, Mary, we talked to a lot of people in your position. They're like, holy smokes, I've made so much money in real estate. Why don't I go move somewhere a little different? I don't have to move that far even to get a much better valuation in real estate, and then I'm financially set.
I don't want to pay a lot of taxes, and I don't want to move away from here.
Okay, well, the first answer is you don't want to move away from there. So the second answer to the question is, do you liquidate the 401k to pay these off? The answer is no, you don't want to do that. Do you move from?
You could just take your 59, almost 60, so if you're 59 and a half, you can take money out of your 401k as needed right now to bridge it over until you get another job.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that.
Do I have to pay taxes on it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to pay taxes.
Much less than...
And the rules with 401k is different from an IRA, which is from a 401k, if you're 55 or older in the year in which you separate from service from a job, there's no penalty taking the money out of a 401k.
Even if you're not 59 and a half.
If you're 59 and a half... and the money's in an IRA, you can take money without a penalty. And you said you're 59 pushing 60. It doesn't matter as long as you're over age 55 when you separate from service. Yeah. So I would not look to drain the 401k to pay those mortgages
off. I would agree with Pat. What I would consider doing, if I were in your situation, I would consider doing an exchange on your rental home. Was that was your primary residence? Yeah.
No, not anymore. Okay. It's been rented for the past 3-4 years.
Okay.
I would, if it were me, because you're getting, if you look at the gross yield, $4,500 a month on a, let's call it $2 million, that's a 2.25% yield for a real estate yield. That is really low.
Yeah, it's extremely low.
So in other words, you're not getting very much rent relative to how much, what the value of that property is. If it were me, I'd look at exchanging that into some other markets, maybe have 4 rentals and have a property manager. You could have much more cash flow out of that.
Or Scott selling it outright, paying the taxes on it and living on it, paying the...
She just said she didn't want to pay the taxes.
I know no one wants to pay the taxes. Have you met anyone ever that wanted to pay the taxes?
No, but it was certainly had enough people who called right before the financial crisis and didn't want to pay taxes on their real estate.
Yeah.
Only wish they had later.
Well, in terms of paying taxes, I have a lot of capital losses back in the days.
Mary, you know what you'd be best served with? You really should sit down with a good certified financial planner who can help you kind of map out what are Mary's options right now, right? Because you've got a number of them in front of you. So, and I think you called, should I take the 401k, cash it in, and pay off the house?
That's just
not going to work because the way the tax laws work. But I think you should look at a number of different options. And then you could go back and then you could say, which one's going to work best for me? That's what we'd highly recommend.
Okay.
But do not cash out that 401k to pay off those loans. That is a certainty.
Well, I wasn't going to cash it all at once. I was going to take like $20,000, $30,000 a year and just pay off lower the bill. And then, until I'm
Well, it might make sense. It all depends on what your work's going to be like. So if you plan on going back, like I said, I really think you'd benefit sitting down with a financial advisor.
I agree with Scott.
We've got a couple great advisors in the Bay Area if you want to chat with one of us or talk with someone else you know. But hey, Mary, we appreciate the call. We wish you most of success. You know what's interesting, Pat? if home values have gone in parts of the Bay Area, San Francisco, San Jose,
crazy. I feel like I've seen this movie before. Do you ever feel that way?
I don't. I was talking to a buddy the other day. I said, he's actually in the construction trades for building apartments in the Bay Area, right? Throughout the Bay Area. And I said, it'll be interesting what happens when technology goes through another recession. Because it has.
It will.
Nobody knows when, right?
But it will again.
Everything goes through their cycles.
Yes.
And what impact that could have on real estate prices.
Scott, especially if you see what some of these technology stocks are trading at versus their revenue, not even their earnings.
Well, when you've got a roughly $2 million house that rents for $4,500 a month, there's a little imbalance there. Anyway, appreciate the call. Now, it's the time of the program that we do every other week where we talk real advice. And during this period of our program, we talk with one of our financial advisors. We've got a team of excellent financial advisors, and they share a story, real life story of working with a client. Of course, we change the names. We don't use their names, change the circumstances somewhat to protect their confidentiality. But this is a real experience that one of our clients have gone through, and it kind of highlights how we approach these things and what our advisors do.
And your experience may not be similar. As a disclosure, we are required to tell you that this is a individual experience of a client, and yours may be different.
That's right. So anyway, this week we've got Barbara Healy, and Barbara is a certified financial planner as well as a chartered retirement planning counselor. Barbara's been with Hanson McLean since 2004 and works out of one of our Northern California offices. And Barbara, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the program, and you've been a guest a number of times over the years. So tell us about a situation that we can learn something from.
Well, a couple in their mid-60s, they were ready to retire, and each of them have pensions. They had Social Security. They've got $900,000 in investments, IRAs and a trust account, another $250,000 in a 401k, and $100,000 in savings. You look at this and you say, wow, these are not the clients we worry about, right?
Correct.
They were probably worried, though.
Were they worried when they came in?
Yes, they were.
Yes.
And here's why. Their pensions and Social Security will cover their expenses. So they're fine on their living expenses, allowing for inflation, they're good. But they wanted an additional $2,000 per month for trips to see the grandkids and other kinds of travel. So here were their questions. Here was their quandary. First, what should I do with the 401k? He's retiring, and he had it conservatively invested.
And real quick, Barbara, were their kids and grandkids outside of the state where they resided?
One local,
one
on the East Coast.
Because I certainly noticed that, one of those budgetary items at retirement, for some people, an increase in expenses is just simply visiting the grandkids.
Yeah, travel.
To see the grandkids.
Absolutely.
Not even really travel. It's just, I got to go to Ford to, we somehow have to get to the East Coast to see the kids.
Right. And that's a high priority. So the second thing they wanted, their second question was, where should I withdraw this $2,000 a month? So they had three choices, right? They had the $900,000 in investments in IRAs and trust accounts, invested in a balanced approach, but it fluctuates daily, and that made them a little nervous to pull that out. Second option was the cash savings, the $100,000. They can draw that down at $2,000 per month. That would last about 4 years, but then they'd be out of cash. The third option was the 401k. It was invested conservatively, but as you take the distributions, they'd be taxed. So there are really pros and cons to each of these options. So,
and every decision you make today is going to have an impact in the future, right?
Well, yes. Very good point.
You ignore the 401k and it's going to grow. You know, all those things.
Right. Exactly. So it made sense at first blush to say, well, gosh, just roll the 401k into the existing investments and take distributions from there, but not for this client. We asked a lot of questions. We spent a lot of time listening to what they were really saying. And in the end, their biggest consideration was investment stability and which option would help them sleep at night.
And this is even coupled with pensions coming in.
Right, with pensions, with Social Security. But you're right, Scott, they still wanted that what will help me sleep at night with these market gyrations. So that was more important than getting the maximum return. So think about 2008, right? Clients who retired in January of 2008, October 2007, or early 2000.
Yeah, it's brutal.
What did that, right.
It's very frightening.
I mean, you wrote an article about that.
I don't recall that one. Sure, it was brilliant.
So where did you end up doing, Barbara?
That's exactly right. Here's their solution that we came up with. Leave the 401k as it is, keep it conservatively invested, and withdraw the monthly income from that. Here's why. It gave them the peace of mind that the income source was stable, that there was minimal fluctuation to it. They were reminiscent and thinking about 2008 and how, gosh, if I'm pulling money out of my investments as the markets are going through the gyrations, I don't want to do that. That was not peaceful for them. So we left it there, and then that really would take them through the next 10 years, at which point they'd start withdrawing the rest of the investments, and it gave it 10 years for them.
So, but overall, their distribution was sub 2% of their overall. And you would have actually been comfortable increasing that distribution past the $2,000 a month, would you not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cost to see grandkids are a priority, probably the most important thing to them. So taking, like we said, are these the clients we worry about? Absolutely not. Taking out less than 2% of your investments was easy to do, and certainly sustainable for their portfolio to grow over time. Was most important is they didn't want to have to pull monies out as the markets are going through gyration. So here's where I give them a lot of credit. They had the discipline to keep the conservative assets in that 401k and not worry about what returns they were missing.
That's right.
Because their objective was being satisfied.
And it allowed their other dollars to take a longer term approach than that would otherwise.
So it's almost psychological where you actually got this in different buckets, Barbara. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Let me ask you this question, Barbara. When did you become a certified financial planner? Do you recall what year that was?
Well, it's been in the industry almost 23 years, but CFP probably.
Let's take the 23 years. In that 23-year period, can you think of another time when you recommended someone in their 60s to leave their 401k at where it is and draw it down over the next decade?
After 2008, it became more of an apparent choice.
My point is, it's like every situation is so unique. And I think what's interesting about this, I mean, textbook answer would not be to do the strategies Barbara's doing.
Right.
Textbook.
Textbook was...
Well, textbook ignores human emotions.
Right.
It just looks at probabilities of outcomes, ignores how we actually act as human beings.
But Barbara, do you think that this technique will change in the next 3 or 4 or 5 years that you might come back and revisit this if their objectives change?
No, not for this particular client. Like you said, every client's going to be different. But with this client, I would say no, because what was still most important to them was keeping the investment stable.
Got it.
And drawing from a stable income source. And you're absolutely right. Then the rest of their investments can take on a little bit more risk an ounce. But they're comfortable if markets go down.
But we don't see that many 401ks that have the stable value funds in them anymore, though. Do you?
That's a good point.
But they work for the state. Probably state or federal government. Both have pensions.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it's...
Pensions? Where do you get couples both having pensions anymore? Unless they work for the state or federal government.
Yeah. Yes, that's a good point.
A municipality?
And for a lot of people, they don't have stable value funds in the 401ks. So this wouldn't work. But for this particular situation, not only did you understand their objective, you understood the alternatives above and beyond what Hanson McLean can offer.
Right.
That's the reality.
And they're comfortable with it because they wanted that peace of mind.
And it's good advice. It's good advice, Barbara.
Well, thank you.
As always.
Yeah. Thank you, Barbara.
As always.
So thank you
for being with Hanson McLean for how many years now?
A long time. Putting up with us for a long time, Barbara. So. Thank you.
You make it easy.
Oh, look at there. Get her a corner office, kids. Get that barber a corner office. Go into that little muckety-muck sitting in that corner office right now and tell him to get up and get out because it's your office now, Barbara.
Thanks. Thank you, Barbara.
My pleasure.
All right. You know, it is interesting, Pat, how just I think good financial planning is where we can say, what are the financial options available to us? What are objectives we're trying to meet? Tied in with who are we as people?
Who are we? Who?
Because so Pat and I have been working together pretty much since out of college.
Yeah.
Our portfolios are quite different.
That is correct.
Our way we spend money is different.
That is correct.
I mean, it's just, if you looked at our two portfolios, they would be quite different.
Yep.
We're roughly the same age.
Yep. But we have a different tact. And I would say that equally as educated in financial matters.
Of course.
But we have a slightly different view of the world.
Yeah.
And not one isn't any better than the other.
Well, we're married to different people.
Well, that's yes.
I mean, so we, you know, as there's the family decisions that go in there, husband and wife decisions on our financial planning, but
yes, and it affects it,
and that's why when you hear us talking to Hanson McLean about the product, of if someone's pitching you a financial product, they're starting in the wrong place. The product is just a piece of the
it's a tool
that should be decided after the fact.
You don't ever start by saying, let's look at my tools. You say, let's see what the situation is and diagnose this and then go to the tool.
What are we trying to craft here? Then what's the appropriate tool to accomplish that? So good financial planning really encompasses all those things. It's what assets do you have today? What are you trying to accomplish in your life? Who are you as people? Yeah. What's your wiring? How do you react to various things financially? And so a good financial plan will have encompass those sort of things. And that's the sort of thing we do here at Hanson McLean. We have offices, of course, throughout Northern California, as well as a meeting location in Denver. And anyway, this music means we are out of time. But we are here every week at the same time. Or you can get a podcast at HansonMcLean.com. You've been listening to Hanson McLean's Money Matters, and we'll see you next week.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.